October 17th, 2004, and the Sunday night speakers meeting of Narcotics Anonymous welcomes our first speaker, Maggie.
Hi, I'm Maggie, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Maggie.
I just talked into this.
Yes, you're good.
All right. Thanks, Jim, for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't even know where to start. I have 9 years clean, and I grew up in Southern California. I say Southern California because my father is an alcoholic who did a lot of geographic, and by the time I was 8 years old, we were living in the San Fernando Valley. My father was out of the picture, but I was living in the insanity of the disease, kind of because growing up in an alcoholic home, drug addicted home, you know, because the addict is out of the house doesn't mean the insanity leaves, because the whole family is affected by this disease. So in turn, my mother became kind of the alcoholic without using. She was controlling, managing, manipulative, rageful, and you know, she had 6 children. She was raising us by herself, and she wasn't happy about that, and she really let us know it. And so at a very early age, I started taking things very personal. You know, it was me, I'm the problem. She used to tell us, you know, by the time you and your brother Michael were born, your father's drinking was at his worst. So I took it as, well, Michael and I came into the picture, he started drinking more. And I've carried that for a long time, like, you know, I am the problem, I am the problem. She didn't have time for us. So, you know, I went into my own little worlds, you know, my own little fantasy world of protecting myself from the insanity and abuse that was going on in my house. And I was like a student who didn't do well, underachiever, you know, scared to go to school, scared to leave the house. When I left school, I was scared to go home. I didn't know what was going to be happening. I had a sister who was very physically abusive, and I didn't know what was going to happen to me on a daily basis. So the whole time I'm in school, I'm worrying about what she's going to do to me today, and then at night when it's time to do my homework, my mother and my sister are fighting. And so it was like I was constantly in like chaos in my thinking. And alcohol was a big no-no in our house, you know, because my mother was like, none of you will ever become like your father. So I had this big thing like, you know, never become like my father. And I had my first drink at 14. I smoked pot at 14, but, you know, it just, it didn't do anything for me at that time. It was about the time I was 16, and I was asked to go out on a date, and I had inferiority complex, inadequate, why is this guy asking me? But I liked him, so I went. I mean, I said yes when he asked me, and he happened to work at Long's Drugstore, and he bought, like, a case of champagne, you know, for the prom. And I was so nervous, as soon as he opened up the bottle, I just started guzzling it. And I'd say that was my real first drunk. And it got me through prom because he was like this really popular guy at Notre Dame High School, and he knew me through my sister, not through the girls in my school. And I felt so inferior because I was not one of the popular girls. And, you know, that whole, like, feeling less than and, you know, don't have anything to offer. And so that champagne was like a godsend. And that was like the first thing. It's like, oh, if I, you know, use something to calm me down, I can get through things. And like I said, I was an underachiever, so I got my first job. And the first job I got was at a pizza restaurant in San Fernando Valley. And everybody there used drugs. So that was like my new family. And I was 19, and that's really where my disease took off. You know, there was beer tap, there was people smoking pot, there were people like taking Black Beauties, you know. There were people snorting heroin on the patio, but since I was the manager of the restaurant, they didn't include me in that. And, you know, I think that's a God thing, because I was 19 years old, and I'm sure if I was snorting heroin at 19, I probably wouldn't be here today. I think God protected me along the way. So it's just from 19 to age 39 is when my disease was in full blown, you know, and I tried not to be like my father, so I kept a job, I was in really bad relationships, I always took care of the men, I made the money, and they were always addicts. I always felt more comfortable with someone I could use with. I could never be with a guy who'd never used. And along with, you know, all my using came, you know, bankruptcy and no life, really. In my head, I thought I had a life. I had a fantasy that I had a life because I had an apartment, I had a car, I paid my rent. And so I was not like my father. And this is a progressive illness. And my disease progressed. When I was 37, I was introduced to crack by this guy that I was going out with, and that was like, you know, why didn't I find this sooner? You know, I took my first hit, and it was just like, wow, I want to die, you know, using this, you know. And it just, what it did was, it just accelerated my disease to a point where it brought me to my knees. You know, my apartment was, you know, I didn't have any money left, and, you know, it's just those, I didn't know what to do. I called my brother, and I went up to this recovery home up in Santa Barbara for 90 days, and I didn't know it at the time, but while I was up there, I had the obsession to use the whole time I was there. I did not know what was wrong with me. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat, and my, you know, my mind was whirling, and it was just, I wanted to use again, but I didn't know that then, but I looked back, and that's what it was, because when I left Santa Barbara, I just picked up when I got back to L.A., and I saw where my life was going, and it was like, I didn't like the where it was going, and since I'd been introduced to 12-step up in Santa Barbara, I went back into another treatment center, and that's where I was introduced to NA, because they had a basic text on the desk at the treatment center, and I used to flip through the book, because I was first introduced to AA, and then I was in the adult recovery home in the back, and they would go to NA meetings, and the only reason I really went to NA meetings was there was this guy I went through the adult recovery home with, and I liked him a lot, so I used to go see him at Friday nights at Justin Park. So he was the attraction first. And then I used to listen to what everybody was sharing, and, you know, I liked what I was hearing because I heard, like, raw, you know, raw truth about life as a drug addict. And I was like, I can relate. So, you know, he and I hooked up, of course, and went to a lot of NA meetings, you know, really, and that was our life, you know. I lived with him. We went to a lot of NA meetings. I had one sponsor didn't work out, and then I had another sponsor who really started working the steps when I had 3 years clean. And she brought me through the steps, and she taught me about the principles and applying the principles. And, you know, you hear those words, compassion, tolerance, responsibility, discipline, loving, kindness, acceptance, and it's like, you know, you say to yourself, wow, that's really easy, I can do that. I mean, those are like simple. And then there are these things called character defects, and then there's a thing called like acting out on them. You know, for me, this was also new because I was always right, and I always had to be right, and for me to like be humble and admit I was wrong was like one of the hardest things, and still is the hardest thing, and that really affected the marriage I was in, because I ended up marrying that guy, and you know, we got together too soon in recovery for my, you know, for me, and anyways, we were trying to grow up together, you know, in recovery, and we were too new in recovery, and I acted out a lot in fear, and you know, a lot of my issues as a child with such a domineering mother and a mother who was so controlling. I had a lot of that in me, and you know, I used a lot of that on him, and it didn't work. You know, I tried to control that man, and it just didn't work. And you know, I tried, and I tried every, you know, way the disease works: manipulation, control, guilt, shame, you know, rage. Put him down a lot. I was very verbally abusive towards him, and you know, he was the problem because I was the good girl. See, all that comes out in steps. You know, when we work the steps, we get to look at ourselves and our part. And I was like, but I'm such a good person, and my sponsor's saying, no, you're not. you know, you got to look at that. It's like, you know, she's very honest with me. I needed someone to tell me the truth about myself, and she told me the truth about myself. And you know, I needed to hear it, and I didn't like hearing it. And you know, once he and I got in a fight, and he decides to call her in the middle of the fight. He's like, oh, hi, Benra. You know, do you have that phone number for so and so? And all of a sudden he's like, oh, well, Maggie and I are in this whole, and then next thing you know, he gives the phone back to me and she's laughing hysterically. She's like, you have to laugh at this stuff, but you also have to thank your husband for calling me. You know, I was like, no way, I am not thanking my husband for calling me. She's like, you have to do that. So I did it, you know, because that was one thing. And you know what? It was like, you know, when we start applying the principles, people around us change. He softened, you know, he wasn't all tense. And I was like, oh, thank you for calling that on. It really helped, and you know, da da da. And then he just like softened, and he was like, wow, it really works. You know, I did use that tactic too often, but I wish I had, you know, down, you know, hindsight. But you know, I didn't know how to live life, and you know, I didn't know how to treat people. I always thought I did. I always thought I was just polite. You know, I was raised in an Irish Catholic home, and you didn't raise your voice, and you didn't. You know, and I, in my fantasy addict thinking, that's who I was, but I was also retaliatory, revengeful, I'm going to get you before you get me, and, you know, I had a lot of anger, rage, and working the steps and applying the principles, you know, a lot of that has subsided, and it's through finding a God of my understanding, you know, the first three steps, that's what my sponsor taught me, is by the time you get to the third step, this is where we start looking for a God of our understanding, a power greater than ourselves to restore us to sanity, because on my own, I'm insane. And insane is like in my thinking. And it took, you know, it's still, you know, it has to sink in, but it's you know, it's a, we have to do this. What I was taught is I have to work my spiritual program on a daily basis. You know, the program I worked yesterday will not carry me over in today. The meeting I went to last week is not enough to keep me going for 3 weeks. You know, and the meetings are to remind us, at least this is what I was taught, to remind me that, you know what, I'm an addict. And, you know, I don't think like other people do. I'm sure I feel like other people do, but I, you know, I'm extreme in my self-centeredness. I'm extreme, you know, and that's where my acting out comes from, is my self-centeredness, because don't you know who I am? I'm a, you know, I'm the queen. You should treat me like the queen. My ex-husband should have known how to treat me, and he didn't. In my thinking, but he, you know, he did the best he could, and he was very loving, but it wasn't enough because I had not worked enough of a program to get into self-acceptance and to accept him where he was at. And I talk about, you know, his relationship and mine because it was just a prime example of how I am in the world. And, you know, he was the closest person to me. And it was my first real relationship, clean. And, you know, it was, that was a new experience, too. And, you know, I sponsor other women. And I go to meetings. I have commitments. You know, I'm really, like, right now into the God, you know, the higher power thing. I don't want to use God in case someone, you know, doesn't like that word. But the higher power, like, finding, you know, a power greater than myself, because on my own, I can't do it. My self-will will get me into trouble. And I'll basically, you know, live the same way I lived while I was using if I don't work the steps and practice the principles of the program. How long am I supposed to share for? 15? Really? All right. No, I didn't look at my watch, so I'm sorry. Timing me. Oh. Anyway, life, living life on life's terms is very painful, and sometimes living life on life's terms is too much. So I was taught to pray and ask God for help, and your will, not mine, the whole thy will, not mine, is really important to me, because it's like, what would, you know, it's like I have to put someone else before me, because if I put me before someone else, you know, it's like, it's always, I'm going to get into trouble. And I don't know. I grew up in such a house that was like really stifled, no communication, and you know, I had a sponsor that taught me how to communicate and taught me how to express myself, at least practice it, You know, she really taught me how to practice expressing myself. And that was really hard to do. And let me see. I'd say I really grew up in step six, step four and five. I read my resentments, I did a fifth step, and I didn't get any kind of like relief that they talk about. But by the time I did finish the sixth step is when I got the tremendous weight off my shoulders. After I did step six, I felt like I belonged. I could sit in meetings and I felt like, you know, I could sit there without feeling like I'm taking someone else's seat or maybe I shouldn't be here. And I just can't believe how much that step just really just transformed about how to live my life in a different level than I've been living it. Because, like my ex-husband used to say, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And, he heard that somewhere. And, you know, it's like, I think that, you know, I could say that about me too, you know, because it's like low self-esteem and like a high self-esteem. And it's just like, and I have to watch my motives and what I say to people and like think, I have to pause before I say something, because a lot of times it's because when I grew up, I was like the fourth of six and I never spoke. I never said a word. And now that, you know, I'm in recovery and, you know, I have a voice, I say too much. And sometimes I say too much and it's like gobbledygook, you know. It's like I have to ask God to help me, you know. And that's what, like I said, that's what I'm coming to now. It was like, you know, step three, you know. Give my will and my life, you know, to God. Because those are my thoughts and my actions. And that's daily, you know. How I think, how I act, how I treat people, being responsible at work, showing up to work on time is really hard. You know, that's the arrogance, you know, if I can do what I want, you know, I'm a good worker, that's enough for them. And really, you know, I have to practice the principles of responsibility of, you know, showing up on time. And I don't know, I don't think I really have much more to say. I was taught how to love here, and I was given a lot of love here because I didn't think I was lovable and I didn't think I knew how to love. And one of the things my sponsor told me in my sixth step was one of the things I did is I withheld love from people. Withheld love from my family, withheld love from others. And I never knew I did that, but that was a way to keep me separate from others. And that's been the main focus of the program of Narcotics Anonymous is love, you know, and we learn how to love, how to accept love, how to be loving, even when we don't want to, how to be understanding, even when I don't want to, and it takes practice. I need to apply these on a daily basis. So I see the next speakers here, so I'm just going to let them. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.